Hey guys, I'm Art, and I am a recovered
addict. Hey, Art.
I'm really glad to be here. I remember speaking here a few years ago, and it was a little different. I had a mic and speakers, and there was a band or something going on back there.
I'm going to take off my jacket because
you guys don't look like you're dressed for this, and I do. So, I'm really glad to be here because I just got back from a CA convention in Denver. First of all, I'm a real deal crack addict. I started smoking crack when we were freebasing it back in 1985. And I smoked freebase for a few years till they came out with something shitty called crack cocaine and started making me paranoid, and I kept smoking it. And it's important that you all know that I smoked crack for a long, 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 long time because I couldn't stop smoking crack because I absolutely fell in love with it. I fell in love with it at the expense of my family, my life, my mind, every job I ever had, and everything I ever owned. I gave it all away. It didn't take any of it. I gave it away. And I will do it again. Unless I have a power between me and that rock. So before I go on, I'm going to take a moment, because the last thing you want to do is hear anything coming from me. You want to hear something coming through me. Because if it's coming from me, it's going to be dope addict garbage. And that was my whole life. Just a whole lot of me talking about nothing. You know? So give me a moment and we're going to kick this thing off. That's the bell. Okay. So I'm in Denver last week, and I'm part of a community of recovery that absolutely blew my mind. I've been to a few conventions in CA, and I had the fortune to speak at one last year, but this time I got to go as a non-voting delegate and as a non-speaker, but I willingly paid my way, drove to Denver, Colorado, spent a week there, sat in a convention with a bunch of dope fiends, about 300 of us, and had one of the most amazing multi-day experiences of my life. Multi-day. A community of spiritual fellowship surrounded by people who willingly wanted to be there, went out of their way to get there. There were people from Hong Kong, South Africa, eight of the surrounding states, some further, some from California. And I'm saying that because it saddened me to know that this place might close. And we posted on the convention's Facebook page after we left how much we love the community there, how much we love the spiritual vibe, how much we love that energy that was there. And some of the people posted back, they said, "Hey guys, we were where you were. Don't bail on them." Because everyone's like, "We want to come to Colorado and be with you, with your family, with your energy. This is amazing." And they've said, "No, we were where you were." And I remember I've been going to meetings in Denver, CA meetings, for a few years. I'd go up on business and I'd stop in and see meetings. So I know some folks up there. And it wasn't where we are today. It was smaller. I went to meetings and there was no one there anymore. I'm calling CA's Colorado page. I'm not getting a hold of any. I'm like, "I'm standing in Boulder outside this meeting. It's not here." They go, "Oh, they closed that 3 years ago." "Well, I'm at this other one." They go, "No, you need to go to Dark Side of the Spoon." Okay. And so I'm going to these meetings and I'm wondering, how are they holding it together? Because it looked like it was a trap house, the meeting. Seriously. People were coming. It was in the bottom of a church. They were coming in and out all meeting long. And they looked like they were going out to get high and coming back in. But they built something. They went through some changes. It was hard on them. And I hope Spiritual Lines, because I spoke here about 5 years ago, and I hope we don't see this place go. And I don't think it's going to go. I think we're committed to keeping it here. It didn't seem that way 8 minutes ago when that front gate was closed. I got worried, y'all. I said, "Are we really going to have a meeting here tonight?" So I want to talk about a couple things. First of all, I love Cocaine Anonymous. Did I say that yet? Thank you. I do. I love it because it didn't save my life. It saved my family's life. It saved anyone who dealt with me's life. I hurt people because I needed to feel better. And I'm going to talk about surrender. And I'm going to talk about two kinds of surrender, because what happened to me last week was every speaker that brought... Every speaker that was brought there and a message was spoken through them, they said the one critical thing I listened for. I listened clearly. When did that moment hit? When did that moment hit? It never hits while I'm out there, by the way. Never hits while I'm out there. And it rarely hits while I'm in here. There comes a point where it's before my recovery, then there's my after my recovery, and then there's that moment, that cathartic moment, that something changes. And I heard people say it, and every speaker I heard had that moment. There was a Crip, an ex-Crip, speaking about recovery. He talked like a preacher now. It was amazing. There was a woman in there who does Indian sweat lodges talking about her moment of surrender. The guy on the last night didn't use until he was 40-something, lost everything. Oh, no, he used at 18, but he didn't get sober until he was 52, lost everything. Another guy from Hong Kong didn't get sober until he was 57. First time using, 52 years old, lost everything. A mansion and every business he owned. None of that makes him a dope fiend. Me losing and giving up and getting thrown in jail does not make me a dope fiend. There's a specific way I react when I put something in me that the normal drinker doesn't have. When I take that hit, I don't feel it after that first one. And I was taking 20 to 50 cent pieces, and these are dollars, by the way, at a time, and I wasn't getting that first hit I got in 1985 when I was rocking it up. I wasn't getting that hit. I wasn't getting that feeling. I never got it again. So I came from a very wealthy family from upstate New York. Wait, no, that's another guy. I came from a very poor family. Single mom on welfare in 5 different states. Dad was in prison. I needed a drink at a very young age. I needed it at 5, and I got it at 12. So I was an insanely dry drunk for 7 years as a child in need of a drink. I needed a drink because I stuffed my feelings because I hated my life and the reality I was put in. And I fought it, and I resisted it, and I was angry, and I was scared, and I was alone. But I called it, I just don't want to talk about it. I'm not going to talk about it. Nothing's the matter. Everything was the matter. Everything was wrong. I find myself at 5 years old in an orphanage with parents. Think about that. That shouldn't be happening. I leave an orphanage and go to 2 foster cares. One day I'm really hungry and I find myself getting my hands burned on the stove because I snuck down and ate food in the middle of the night at 7.5 years old. That does not make me an alcoholic or an addict. That just gives me warm fingers. I got out of there. My mom was gracious enough to come back and pretend to be my mom. And hauled us off out of Cleveland, Ohio to New York City. And that's where the fun started. It started young. I started getting high, 12 years old. My mother was raped in front of our house on Christmas night. This time, against her will. I don't know if y'all know what that's about. I used to protect her a lot and speak highly of her. Now I just don't understand why she was here, other than the fact that I was the benefit of it. I forgave her before she passed, made amends. But I can't forget how it felt. You know how I know I can't forget how it felt? Because I had to smoke a lot of rock to not feel it. And so I'm really twisted up as a kid, and I get that quart of Miller High Life and that joint with some friends outside of junior high, and I felt okay. We're going around the circle. They're saying, hey, you feel high, you feel high. I said, no, I feel good. And that was the last day I went to school. That day. Never went again. Well, I went to sell drugs, but I went out the back door immediately after everyone went into class. There was no more people to sell to. I waited, came back at 3:30, sold again. And that's how my life went. I end up in juvenile detention because I'm a fool. For 18 months, my mother does not come and get me for a truancy pickup at a mall. So I spent 18 months in New York State juvenile detention. I'm in there with people. Well, I was also robbing houses and boats and shit like that. But I always get caught for the thing I didn't do. You know, like, oh, it's truant. But that's what I was actually in for. So everyone was looking down at me like I was soft or weak. So guess what I have to do almost every single day? Fight. Every day. That was my life. So that process, I get out of there 19 months on an 18-month sentence. I come home. We're living in the project in Astoria, Queens, because we were poor. And I was working in the city, and I come back from work on the subway, and I walk upstairs, and everything's gone again. This time there's a note saying, I can't handle this anymore. Here's the money for the rent. And there was nothing in the apartment. My brother and I spent that money that night. I had nowhere to live. A couple months later, I found out my mom's in Dallas. And I flew here on a one-way ticket. Rode my bicycle to LaGuardia Airport, left it there, and flew here. She left 2 months later, moves to Biloxi, Mississippi. And I'm telling this almost like I'm not feeling it because I've processed this already, guys. I've done this work on this issue. I've done the work on my problems. But none of them problems, again, make me a crackhead. Because this stuff has happened to people who aren't like me, who aren't addicted to crack. So I get here, she goes to Biloxi, Mississippi, I join the Army. I get thrown out of the Army in 2 months for drugs. So I've got a good track record. I'm heading to prison soon because I'm institutionalized. Literally, I'm seeing the progress. It doesn't turn out that way. I meet a woman who decides to take care of me and love me. We have 3 kids together. And I ripped her life apart every single day with all my might on purpose. And I can't blame getting high on that. Can't blame it. So I'm going to fast forward. My using turned on me in the summer of 1988. 3 years of freebasing, getting into some crack. In 1988, it turned on me. It was never fun again. I never used with a person. I sat in my closet or I drove around all night long. I'll give you an example. Most nights I could put about 400 miles on my car and I would go through like car washes, pop a hit, go to a drive-thru, pop a hit, drive under the overpasses, pop a hit, go into the next exit's overpass, pop a hit. And then I was getting so savvy because I come in this way through Northwest Highway and I pass the Northeast substation. I knew where they all were. I know where Central's is. I know where the one off of McCallum and Hillcrest is. So I know the one in West Dallas. So I would avoid a police car ever seeing me twice. Ever. And I'd put a couple hundred miles on a car. One night, I am rocking it up off of Dolphin Road in Samuel at this motel. I scurry out of there like a little scared rat. And I end up on Harry Hines. I'm hitting at the Circle Inn and the Luxury Inn and the Deluxe Inn and all the nice little comfortable resort hotels along Harry Hines. And so I'm heading out of there because now I'm freaking out. I'm paranoid, schizophrenic. I'm driving forward by looking in my rearview mirror. I end up going out I-80 past Terrell because it was dark highway and I could keep hitting. And I have a crack pipe about this big now, glass on both sides, cutting my fingers open. The chore had been smushed so badly that it would suck through when I hit. I put a blast on, I do the hit. I'm saying this because it's important that I see and know how sick I was getting. And I blast that hit. It went in. It was so bad, my head starts ringing. The chore was burning hot, went right down my throat. I threw up right through the pipe, all over my lap. I had a 40-ounce beer, it went all in there. Take the chore, stick it back in, and put another hit on it, and turn it the other way and hit again. That was how I was getting high at the end. That was a good time. Fortunate enough that my two stints of sobriety, this was the surrender of the first one. I end up rocking out for a while longer. Holy shit. 6 more years of that. 6 more grueling years of that. The police kick in my door. My work is there. They thought I died. The apartment looks like it's basically a hostage-taking hideout. But I was the hostage. And I had my own gun to my head. It was pitch black. Blanket staple gunned on the windows. And I'm sitting in the closet smoking up. I indignantly stepped over that door and I moved to Dallas. I come up here and I hit a bottom. I end up in the woods on Super Bowl Sunday in January 30th, 2000, and I fall on my knees. And I don't have any words. And I just say, come on, man, I'm crying. I just say, come on. I've got poison oak and bronchitis and the disease of addiction. Because I would walk around in the woods smoking crack and I was touching trees. And I'm from New York City, I don't understand trees. It's all over me. I'm dying. I'm itching. Oh, and I had lice because I was staying in my friend's trailer park with his dogs and sleeping on their couch. I had lice. And now I can't catch lice. I go back in his house. He goes, you can't sleep here. It's Super Bowl Sunday. We have people coming over. I'm freaking out. I've got 3 kids that I owe child support on. I got a vehicle that they're about to take. They've been looking for it. And I got a newborn with another woman. And I am unable to show up in my life or theirs. And I'm scared. You have a phone book. And that didn't come out of me easily. But what happened was when I fell to my knees, one sentence came out. It says, call AA. He hands me the phone book. There's 2 meetings, Lake Area AA and 7 Points meeting. And I call him and they say, come on down, man. This is Steve. And I walked in there that day. And I went every day. And they cared for me. They were brutal. They used to say to me, please don't say this to people. They would say, what's a piece of shit like you doing here? Every day I walked in. You ain't going to make it. You're going to be punching a dumpster by the end of tonight, smoking crack. And every day I wound up back there. And every noon I wound up back there. And they would laugh at me and make fun of me. And I remember one day, about 60-something days in, they said, this one guy specifically, reminds me of Yosemite Sam, Jimmy P, and he said, what's a piece of shit like you doing here? I said, I'm not a piece of shit. He goes, finally. Thank you. No, you're not. And I felt something rise up in me. Something real. I was a human again. And no one was going to talk to me like that. I wasn't a junkie. I wasn't going to rob you. I can be trusted. I was reliable to the point of 60 days of recovery. Let's not forget that. That was a surrender point on that ice. But it didn't last. It lasted 11 years. What happened at that period of time is there was a specific way I worked the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous. See, I felt like that power stopped me. Sliver of time, the before recovery life, I couldn't hear him because I was locked up in my own insanity, delusion, chaos. And after recovery, I couldn't hear him because I wouldn't listen. What happened was this. In that sliver of time, moment of grace, moment of willingness, the moment of clarity, I seized on it and I actually cooperated. I said yes. And guess what I said yes to? Anything at that moment, anything you wanted was better than me. Guess what happened the next day? I know what I need to do to get sober. I'm going to do all this. I'm going to do more. I'm going to do it harder. And what I began to do was forget and believed something that was very dangerous to me, and it eventually put me back out there after 11 years of sobriety. Let me give you my next bottom. After 11 years sober, I have a surgery for a hernia. They put about a 7-inch slice up my side, put in a mesh. I'm good to go. I'm not a downer. I like to go fast, and I like to go up. I like to go there quickly, as fast as possible, faster than that even. They gave me 24, 5, 325s. If anyone knows what hydrocodones are, you can get them in 10, 325, or 5, 325. They're nothing to me. This is like, nothing. Don't feel it, because I'm in a lot of pain. They run out, and I'm in recovery. My sponsor knew I was taking them. I had time at that, 10 years. And they gave me another prescription for another 24. And that ran out, and everything's fine. And then all of a sudden, I wanted one, and I didn't have any. Ever have that happen? Ever been there? Wanted one and didn't have any. That's when dope fiend art comes alive. And something in me changed right then. I never considered what it was going to look like going forward. I never considered all the progress I've made behind. I never even thought about the insanity I was in at that moment. That was going to guarantee that, guess what? I'm going to smoke crack again. Behind a little white pill that I didn't even care about. Didn't care about that kind of high. Needless to say, I relapsed like a rock star, like a champ. This one was bad. They all are. I don't minimize it or maximize it. It's just what it is. I go back out because I didn't have a power between me and that hit. Wouldn't listen. See, I've been running my program. I've been working my program. And that kept the power out of the equation because I was working my program. I used crack for 43 days. Lost 30 pounds, spent $25,000. My wife was about to leave, and I was walking around my house pacing like a caged jaguar that was injected with crack cocaine. And I remember holding that pistol, creeping back and forth, looking out my windows like this, about 8 feet away from them, thinking they're coming. Anyone ever hear them coming?
Yeah.
They were coming, right? It got to the point that I would lay on the ground and put my arms behind my back in the handcuffed position so they didn't shoot me when they kicked my door in. They never kicked my door in. They never showed. My psychosis had taken over. I'm doing pure hydrocodone from a compound pharmacist now, making my own capsules. I'm rocking $50 pieces at a time, blasting them. I didn't give a fuck. My wife is crying. She had never seen me high. I've got a mound of powder that I'm also cooking on a spoon because the crack wasn't strong enough. And I'm taking Ambien simultaneously for the last month, every day. So I got a good cocktail. I did. I had a good cocktail. I did not want to stop. I literally spoke out of my mouth that night. She's looking, she goes, she was shaking. She walked in, and I stopped hiding it. I couldn't hide it after 36 days, or 43 days. I couldn't hide it anymore. So I just put it out. I'm crushing rocks with the back of a credit card. I'm not even putting it into a line. I'm just going, it's falling out of my face. And I go, like Ric Flair, that loud. I've never felt this good in my life, is what I spoke. And I grabbed the handgun. Once I did that, and I did a hit, it's falling out of my nose all over the floor. And I'm gripping it to the point that my knuckles are white, my hands red. And she walks, backs out of that room, closes that door, and doesn't sleep with me for the first time we've ever been together. I stayed up all night, but all night I was having fun. So I'm going between my office and my bedroom and my living room about every 14 seconds. And then in the closet, I'm back out. And I'm messing with my home theater system that my friend Glenn put in 5 years earlier. He's in the program. I start Facebook chatting Glenn on Ambien, crack, powder, and massive amounts of hydrocodone. I'm deep in the addiction. I'm deep in the insanity. I'm deep in the pain because I was covering a lot of pain. The pain of failure, the pain of the unknown, the pain of staying in control but being out of it. I wasn't enjoying my using anymore. I wasn't using anymore. I was being used. I had been taken over by something. I was being driven to use. Something was getting off on my destruction. That morning, she wakes up, knocks on that door. I answer it, and I had not closed my eyes once except to probably blink. And I had sunken face, gray-toned skin, of the impeccable gray of the well-to-do. She says, I don't think I'm going to be able to stay here. I said, I don't think you should. She goes, I'm scared for you. I said, so am I. She left. All night, I'm Facebook chatting Glenn. Wasted. Come to find out, I had planned for Glenn to come over at 1 o'clock that day to fix my home theater system. Well, it's 9:45, and I've pushed that straight about 40, 50 times. I'm out of dope. I'm scared. I was high enough to kill 3 small children. Like, if they had that content in their blood, they would probably die. The moment that hit was gone, that last one, I was terrified, petrified. Nothing scared me more than being without my medicine. I'm creeping through my house now because no more. I wasn't walking anymore. I was like on a half-bent, scared, fearful, when do they come in? I don't know where to go. Look. And I see Glenn's car pull up, and I panicked. And I was like, I need to tell him one thing. Come back at 1. That's all I need to say. That's all. But remember, I haven't really spoken much, but I'm talking to myself in my mind all night. And he's coming up my stairs, and I have glass doors. I can't really hide. Don't want to hide because Glenn's cool, you know. And he opens. I come out to meet him. I wasn't going to let him in. No one's coming in. And I come out like that. They're like scared. And I wanted to say, come back at 1. And I said, hey, Glenn, I can't stop smoking crack. I need help. That's what came out of my mouth. He just held me, my arms fell to the side, and I cried. And I've not smoked since that moment. Because again, I seized on a moment of grace, a moment of clarity, and it did not last long, that moment. So I got in there, timing and willingness. And I could feel how I gave up. My arms didn't go to hug him. They gave in. My shoulders dropped. All the weight of me leaned onto him. My head's on his chest, and I'm just crying, and the game is over. And I knew the game was over right then. It was over. I knew because I admitted it, and I knew it. I accepted it. I conceded. I was convinced. Simultaneously, all of those things at once occurred. And I was done, and I felt free. And he goes, we'll go to a meeting. I said, okay. At 7 o'clock tonight. I got scared. it's 10, 15 maybe? I go, I'm not going to make it till 7. I made it. That was a surrender point. I was listening to those surrender moments all last week at CA convention. I listened to people when they talk about a surrender moment. Because if my surrender moment wasn't sufficient enough and powerful enough to propel me. See, my crash site is my launch pad. That crash site that morning was where I was going to take off from. Not some other place down the road after I got better. That was the place I had to be brought to. Here's the difference. Told you about the one where I fell on the ice on my knees. Same moment of grace. Same timing, same willingness. Here's the difference. This time, I had no plan, no idea, and I wasn't going to do anything. I'm not coming up with anything. Nothing. Nothing showed up. I had no ideas. Are you done? I don't know. You want to work the steps? Maybe. That was the kind of stuff that was coming out of me. That's not how I am. I'm a type A personality. I'm a go-getter. Like, if you ask me to figure it out, I'm going to tell you how it worked before you told me to figure it out. Because that's how I worked, right? Last time, I got in the way of the power. I was working the program to get access to the power. This time, the power accessed me through that moment of suffering and worked something magically in my life by me not doing anything. However, more was being done than was ever previously done. Isn't that interesting? Last time, I was doing it all, hoping the power was going to join up with my game, my charade. This time, I wouldn't take a movement unless the power, and I don't know how this happens. I was talking to my wife before coming out. I said, I'm going to talk about trust and surrender. Because I don't know what else to talk about anymore. I don't want to make bullshit up. I don't want to tell you there's another way. There wasn't another way for me. I couldn't figure it out. I gave in. I gave up. And when I give in, I give up. I submit myself to what I'm giving in and giving up to. And I allow something to happen through my life. And I trust that it's got my best interest in store. You know how much so that's the case? Because 9 months sober, this time in, I had the clear understanding that God did not get me sober to get me sober. He got me sober to stand here tonight. He got me sober for every guy that walks in my house and spends hours upon hours just reading one paragraph. Because sometimes it takes hours to read one paragraph correctly. He got me sober so my wife never has to fear me. That's... She should take a life insurance policy out on my ass. I would. I know that that might be hard to understand, but let me sum it up in this. If it's grace that gets me here, how come the day after I get here, God says, now it's all on you? Now it's up to you. Good luck. When you get to 3, we'll talk. You might have to say a short prayer you won't mean because someone said it 1,000 times to you and you've echoed it and voiced it with your mouth 1,000 times. Why don't you say some real prayer like, I don't know what to do this time or any time. This time in, I don't feel that the power of God, which is what we're going to be talking about, by the way, that's what I hope that we have that understanding. Because it's all I really have. It's all that the guy who took me through the steps said that he had to offer me. He says, I have nothing else for you. I said, finally. Finally. No tricks up his sleeve. I knew he wasn't bullshitting. He would not let me rely on him. I couldn't use him. He actually said, don't you ever call me in 10th step about trivial bullshit and tell me how selfish you are. Well, aren't we supposed to do that? He goes, you're not supposed to do that with me. I said, okay, you win. What did that make me do? It made me rely on the first part of step 10's requirement. I asked God to remove it. Guess what I was doing? Fuck that. I'll ask you to remove it. As a matter of fact, I'll make it your responsibility to fix me because I feel like shit because I keep doing things that make me feel like shit. And he said, I'm not going to be that way. I'm not in that role. I won't perform that way for you. Thank you for doing that. That's what I owe that person. Thanks for that. Because it taught me something. It taught me that to rely on the grace and the power that brought me in here, who didn't say, I have a list of things for you to do now, or else. The or else is, I'm going to smoke crack again. See, I'm going to smoke crack again if I leave here without the power. If I stay close and perform his work well. See, I didn't want to stay close. I wanted to perform his work well. Mm-hmm. Think that would get me close. It always moved me further. Because guess what I was able to say? Look at the work I'm performing well. I wasn't saying, look at the work he's performing. So much so that I'm talking to a guy the other day, and even Jesus Christ said this statement. Hope Jesus doesn't offend anyone. He said, it is not I who do the works, it's the Father who does them through me. If he has to say that, what makes me think I'm not going to have to probably say that? If he can't pull it off, how am I going to pull it off? So that's where it turned into. Now, paradoxically, it looks like, well, shit, you do a lot of stuff, Art. You go to conventions willingly. I sponsor a guy. You all might know David Case. We were sitting outside a firing line one night, like our usual conversations. The meeting ended at 8:30. We stayed till 12, talking in a parking lot. I love those nights. I love all those moments like that. And David goes, how many meetings do you go to? I said, I don't go to any. I'm brought to all of them. And he laughed because he knew it was true. Because I said it in such a way that it couldn't be anything but true. See, I hear people say, man, I just don't want to make a meeting tonight. I go, that's because you're making the meeting. See, I want to be in the flow. And I know when I'm blocking it. So guys, I had some really cool first step understanding that I couldn't stop, even though I would have wanted to. I didn't want to use or not use. I didn't know what I wanted to do. Something said, I know what needs to happen here, and put the brakes on my shit. Seriously, put the brakes. Then, didn't make the requirement all on my weight. Said, no. I'm going to guide you through an understanding and a trusting, reliant relationship. See, it says our real reliance should be on God. Real. Not on my sponsor. Not on the steps. There's a great speaker who I hollow his message. Is Joe Hawk, and he says, do not let the work of AA get in the way of the work of AA. And I did that for 11 straight years, and I died. See, this time coming in, I had everything. And I had nothing. I was so broken inside. I hit a place, a bottom that was emotional in nature. Had emptied me. I was a hollow bone. I was a broken tube. Useless. Empty. And I needed something. I needed something to solve a problem. And that problem is centers in my mind. And that problem has one key thing it seems to say. Over and over and over. It says, you can get out of your problem. But it centers in my mind. So any movement to get out of my problem keeps me in my problem. And finally, I just turned and I said, I'm not listening to you anymore. And I stopped giving attention and interest to myself. And I turned and I said, and I don't know what I was turning to. Because what ended up happening was around my second step time, my sponsor says, why don't you try meditating? And I remember meditating with him and Ben Levinson. And we're sitting there. I'm going, these guys are crazy. And I did it. And he said, do it every day. And I did it. And I liked it. And I found myself doing my nightlies on my carpet in my closet where I was smoking crack one day. And it blew my mind. And I started to cry. I'm sitting in the exact spot where I was killing myself. And now we're shredding and molting that dead skin. And I'm coming alive. And I'm getting freer. And I'm connecting. And I made conscious contact. first thing that had to go were my doubts and my beliefs. And the first place I had to go was the last place I ever thought I had to go, and the last place I wanted to go, and that is inside. How do I know that? Don't mind if I read out of this? You never know. Been in meetings where they don't open it. 55, they say something profound. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality deep down within us. In the last analysis, it was only there that he may be found. It was so with us. So they had this experience. They looked everywhere else too. How many places did anyone else in here look? See, I was looking in women. I was looking in fancy cars. I was looking at moving high-end places. I was never going to live like I did as a poor kid. I started changing everything, but I still wasn't looking within. What are some of the requirements here? We can only clear the ground a bit. If my testimony right now helps sweep away prejudice, enables you to think honestly, encourage you to search diligently within yourself, then, and only then, if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. See, I was joined on the long broad highway long before I was doing any of this shit. And this is long before they talk about steps or turning your life over to the care of God, as I understand them. But why was I putting this off? Why wouldn't I go inside and look inside for this great reality? Because I'm afraid to. It's scary inside. I'll look anywhere out here in the 10 trillion things of the pleasure dome. And everyone knows what kind of pleasure we get out here. Any kind you want is available. I promise you. Because I've tried a lot of them. And none of them fulfilled me. I made a decision to turn towards that power. I took a new position. I stopped playing God by not stopping playing God, by stopping giving attention to what wanted me to play God by not playing God. Think about that one. If that don't twist you up, I challenge you to read the bottom of page 62 because it'll tell you exactly what I said. I couldn't get out of my own shit and I couldn't get out of my own head and I couldn't fabricate a God and I couldn't stop playing it, though I would have liked to. All it asked me to do was take a different position, to turn and trust and rely. But the problem was, I could trust my insanity because it's all I knew, and I can't trust the unknown because I don't know what's going to happen, but I need to trust it. I'm in a bad spot. Caveat. What's my alternative? Closet smoking crackhead? I had some motivation to trust. Very serious motivation. So I did. I didn't get on my knees and say that prayer. I got on my face and said it. I laid on the ground. And I started praying like that quite regularly. Not out of pride. I don't usually even say that often. I did that because I didn't yet feel adequate. And that's my own thing. I still felt broken inside. I still felt unloved. I still felt unworthy. I still was dealing with abandonment and rejection as a child. I still had a lot of stuff to walk through. But I'm starting to rely on a power. I'm starting to trust it. I'm starting to sense that there's something going on here. And I was convinced that self had manifested in various ways, and it has defeated me and is defeating me. So I began to say, okay, now that I've made a decision to abandon myself utterly to his care. And I thought well and long before taking this vital step. See, many people don't think about that. They're 1, 2, 3 in a guy, and in the first sitting, they're 4-stepping them. I wasn't that way. It took me 100 days or so to take that third step. When I took that third step, I was shattered. I was at my sponsor's house. I'm basically in tears. I saw myself in the act. I caught Gollum trying to off me. I knew I was going to die, and I was stone cold sober, going to meetings every single day. And I knew I wasn't going to make it. because I knew the disease of addiction was still active in my mind, and I was tuned into that station, and I wasn't tuning into God's. But I wanted to, and I didn't know how. When they say abandon yourselves utterly, that would be if your car broke down, you would leave it on the side of the road and walk on. My life broke down. I left it there. I left it. Now, it doesn't appear that way. It looks like I'm living in my life. I'm not the person who came in here. I'm cellularly different. I'm mentally reorganized. I'm on a new footing. Ideas, concepts, attitudes, emotions were cast aside for an entirely new set. The God idea was adopted. All ideas I can come up with, even these, were killing me. Don't think I'm saying these aren't important and vital for recovery. This work with God's guidance set me free, rocketed me, put me in a plane of existence I couldn't even dream of. The tip of a spearhead of his ever-advancing creation, think of that shit. That's lofty shit they talk about. They talk about spiritual liberation. They say it up here. We have been seeing another kind of fight, a spiritual liberation from this world. People who rose above their problems. They said, God made these things possible. Why aren't we saying this enough? We're saying, oh man, I work myself, so man, I'm good. God didn't, I'm okay, I get it. You seem jammed up to me, my friend. You seem like you're making heavy going of life. You don't seem very relaxed. Hadn't heard one inspirational, intuitive, insightful word out of you in months. That's the kind of stuff I listen for now in my own head. If I'm talking garbage, I'm not a connect. I'm out of alignment. If you're out of alignment, your car is pulling hard right, and you ain't in NASCAR, which you should be going left, you're going to go get that shit fixed. But yet, I can stay out of alignment with God for months and years, sitting in meetings, baking myself to death, and not be okay and not know what to do. They ain't kidding when they say, we're now on a different basis, a basis of trusting and relying upon infinite God rather than me, rather than myself, rather than my little plans, my little designs. I don't know what my plans and designs wants. So something magical happens. I do a thorough four step, and I mean thorough four step in less than a week. If you're taking longer, you want to smoke crack. Let's get honest. Because I would never take a hit and expect to feel the high in 7 days. Why would I do that? I would never do that. That's insanity. But I've come in here with a death warrant on me, with bounty hunters chasing me, kicking in my door, and I'm like, hold on a second. Give me a moment. I'll get with you in this. No, I'm serious about it because something said, I'm serious about it for you. And I began to say, you're right. And I had the energy to do the things I didn't know how to do or want to do. And I did them. Something miraculous happened. And I'm going to go 5 minutes over since I started 5 minutes late, if everyone's okay with that. At the end, there's four conventions in how it works. The last one's the promised one. The other ones are not so good. Please understand them, though, because they're vital. We hope, Art, you're now convinced that God can remove from you whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. Yes, I am. And I'm even convinced for you that it can happen. I'm so convinced for you that I'll give you all my waking time to bring you to that understanding and promise you that that will happen. So I go at it and I do a fifth step. My fifth step was almost a joke. I'm reading my fifth step very seriously. I was not reading it as though it was a narration about a guy named Arthur. I was reading about it was actually mine, and I owned my feelings around it, and I felt the feelings of the causes that I've brought upon people and why they didn't want me around, and why I played victim and blamed them for my life and continued to stay hurt and mad and pissed off. And my sponsor the whole time was whittling a nickel for 5 hours. Never paid attention. And there was one thing I said, and jumped, was, what was that? And he nailed me. He nailed me cold. He nailed me so bad that he still picks on me about it. I love it because I do the same thing to my guys. Shit rolls downhill, guys. We only do it because we love it. I'm serious. This dude nailed me. He was able to do the very thing I pray that I get the insights to get to when I'm working with someone. He was able to pierce the chink in the armor that my ego was building. And he got right in. And he cut me. And it wasn't a big cut. It was it was laser sharp. But it was the right cut. Because it broke me. And I saw my delusions one more time. 6 and 7 are never ending. 6 and 7 continue for a lifetime. Man, 7 lines, 2 questions, 5 sentences. Please look into 12 and 12 and hear some more information around 6 and 7 for your own sanity, for your own recovery, so we can stop hurting other people and grow up and be mature and live free, connected, thriving, alive. 6 is my step 1 in emotional sobriety. 6 is when I never live a page 52 life again. Ever. I promise you. I'm never going to be plagued by fear, no usefulness to others, inability to make a living. You know, I'm not living like that. Because 6 keeps that from happening. 7, which is basically what they ask me to do through every step, is say, hey, homeboy, until before you get humiliated again, why don't you willingly humble yourself and ask for some help? Preferably from God instead of the girl next to you. I just don't know if anyone does that. I've seen it done. Forgive any women who sit next to a guy. I'm not picking on you. I've just seen it, and it hurts to see it. Amends. My God. I've made so many amends in my life. I've been in recovery for a very, very long time. And I'm sick and tired of having to front people and fall on my sword and tell them I'm a fuck up. And I've hurt them. And I've wronged them. And I don't even know what to do to make it right. This is never going to be enough. I can't earn it back. I don't deserve it back. And yet they let me off the hook every single time. Every single time. I blamed them, played the victim, and accused them. Now I go before them, and I go with them with the wrong attitude. Their attitude is, let me off the hook. Come on, bro. You know, secretly, you know, just, come on, man. Let me off the hook. I stood before people, and I just gave up. I said I was wrong. There's no excuse for this. It wasn't because I was high. It was because I just don't know how to live. I don't know how to show up in your life. I've taken things from you, material and immaterial. I'm prepared to give you back the thing that's materially here, but it's never going to matter. I can't earn your trust. I don't deserve it. Then I asked the hardest question, almost putting them in a position of God by saying, what do you want me to do? And I'll do it. Anything. One person, my ex, said, don't ever contact me again. That was her request. And I contacted her again. Because I'm sick. And I needed to. But I haven't contacted her again after it made sense as to why I contacted her again. Why I needed something outside of me to feel good inside. And 10 and 11 are very powerful steps for me. I found that prayer, meditation, self-examination, they say, woven together, are unbreakable rope, cord. You know, Socrates says, the unexamined life is a life not worth living. So the inverse says, the examined life is worth living. And I challenged a guy, a sponsor. I said, not out of a requirement. I said, would you do some nightlies this week? Don't send them to me, just for you. There's a pattern I'm catching. I need you to see it. I want you to see it. I don't want to tell you what it is this time. I said, how about this? I'll eat my own dog food. I'll do it too. It was nice. It was nice to do it. It was nice to do it because I feel like I'm walking hand in hand with someone and we're trying to get well together. Knowing that there's still room to grow. There's still further. There's still more to go. There's still deeper. The great reality deep down within me is still there, further. I'm just clearing away a little bit. Just clearing it away. So I'm up in Colorado, and I'll wrap up with how this convention affected my life and how I hope it affects Dallas, CA. One of the ex-world trustees invited me to go to a sweat lodge at their house. I walk in, and they truly adopted the philosophy of don't build walls, build longer tables. He had very long tables, and there were people coming into the house all day. We were there about two and a half hours before the sweat lodge. I'd never been in this home. I've seen him a lot in conferences and also at CA meetings in Denver. People are coming in and they're chopping some kale and putting some cranberries and chopped beets and raw almonds. Another person's making rice. Someone's making cookies. And they're just doing all this stuff. And it's very lively. And there's bowls of fruit and there's drinks and there's pretzels and hummus. And they're talking to us and they're including us. And they didn't know us. But they treated us like they were our cousins, our family. And we go to a sweat lodge. Terrifyingly dark and hot. But I bonded with a group of people that I feel that I could never sever. I love them. They loved me. I've walked through fear with them. And that sweat lodge didn't spit me out of the womb. I was birthed out of it, and it was changed my life. We had cigar smoking meetings a couple nights in a row. And we bonded as a family. And we had long talks up in this hospitality suite I did with some people about how we do things in CA here, what things are like, how things are different there, how we can shift. And I promise you, we are changing, and that's not bad. We're growing. We've added more groups. If we could do anything, if everyone can go back to their respective group and maybe end the animosity, the contention, the distance, and the reasons as why we left this group or started this group, and come together and have unity in our fellowship in the Dallas area, this is going to be more vibrant. Because, see, I'm a purist cocaine addict. That doesn't mean you can't sit here if you're a meth head or you shot heroin or you just like them pills, you barred out, you drink, whatever. See, we're all inclusive here. Our all-inclusive third tradition says you're welcome in CA. We don't have an exclusionary drug limit, you know. My sponsor told me addicts die in AA, and he was right, because it was my truth. I said that to someone once, and they got mad at me, and I was glad, because it must have touched them, must have offended them, which means it must have probably been true. I didn't say it angrily. I said, this is what my sponsor told me, and they got mad. They took it personal. I want to talk about meditation for the next 4 hours, but I won't. I meditated before arriving here today because I only wanted one thing to happen, and it did. I'm really glad. And it's so that you guys can benefit. And so that it can go benefit others as well. So it can permeate, cascade down. Go into your groups, your homes, your families, your lives. Maybe change something in your thinking. Maybe not. Maybe harden your thinking. That's good too, because sometimes my thinking had to get so rigid and hard before it snapped, and then it allowed some room. And I got more fluid, and I got more agile, and I got more nimble, and I got more compliant. Not compliant. Pliable. I'm an anti-compliant, compliant guy. If you guys haven't guessed it, I love CA and I love my life. I love the power that brought me here and keeps me here and affords you guys an opportunity to be here as well. Because I would have stood here and spoke to myself. I would have. I've done it. Pretty much do it all day. I talk to myself. As I retired a few years ago, I was fortunate enough to do that. And I made connecting with God and developing a relationship with this power the most important thing in my life. And it is the absolute most important thing in my life. If I gauge my priorities, I can't find something even coming into a close contest for second, much less first. I can't find it. I don't know why. My wife looked at me today and she goes, "One thing you do is trust, and I don't know how you do it." I said, "I have to. You don't." I have to trust. My life depends on it. She doesn't. Not that she's a bad person. So what happened? Having had a spiritual awakening, I read the definition last night. It was funny. We had a meeting about spiritual experiences. I read the definition of what a spiritual awakening is. Vastly different than spiritual experiences. I've had vital spiritual experiences, which continued to prop and push me and pull me and lead me through love instead of driving me through fear, through my recovery. I'm not afraid of going back out because I'm being led somewhere that is infinitely better than the dope head. Not driven to stay sober. But what happened on that spiritual awakening? If I still have it saved, I'll read it. And then we'll close up. Is I don't. And I'm not going to look for it. As a result of that spiritual awakening, a message is carried. My message is consistent across all messages. It's, "Hey guys, check this out. This is interesting. You might not get it. It's actually in those steps. You can have a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps and be free." That's my message. That's all I got. I have nothing else to offer you. If I had something else to offer you, find another program, because this isn't the place to get free. Because what we'd be offering you is something else. And anything short of that is guaranteed doom state. Because see, I suffer from a fatal, chronic, persistent doom state illness. I'm awful. This is AA. This AA said, "This is who you are. You can't differentiate you from false art. You're an outright mental defective. You're in full flight from reality. You're emotionally ill and frequently wrong. You're driven by fear, and you're self-centered to the extreme. Good luck." Who wants to hang out with that guy and let him watch the house or the kids or be married to? Practice principles is a result of a spiritual awakening. I don't spend effort. You know what's so funny is I've been contemplating on this over the last few months. Is I'm asking, how can I not go through this? And immediately the answer rises, stop doing the activity that causes it. What? That's too easy. That's too easy. No, but can't you just take it and I can keep doing it? Nope. If you want to not feel that way, eliminate the causes and the conditions which result in the feeling or the action or the suffering that you're going through. So guys, that's called fire prevention versus fire suppression. How many times have we called our sponsor and said, "Help put out my fire"? And meanwhile, all our sponsor has been doing over the last 6 months, 3 months, 8 months, 2 years, 5 years, 7 years, 10 years is showing us how to prevent them. And we're like, "Ah, fuck that." I appreciate you guys being here. It made it all more powerful for me because it would sort of be interesting to talk to an empty room. But again, I would have done it if I can convey the love I have for each of you. It would be without words, because no words would be able to come close to articulating it. I love you all, man. Thank you.